And we are live. Welcome, folks, to September the 30th. It is a Tuesday, and this is episode 3,739 of the Survival Podcast. Now, yesterday you got an unexpected rewind. Generally speaking, when I leave a rewind behind for you guys, you knew it was going to happen in advance. Like, I'm going to travel to speak, or I am taking a vacation or running an event or something like that. And that's where most of the rewinds come from. Then every once in a while, there's like, oh, shit, everything broke today. This is the best I can do. That happens rarely, but it does happen. Yesterday was a different kind. It was a hybrid. It was a, oh, shit, and I got a plan for one. It's just I didn't plan for it until we were done for the week. I have, because of some changes in the workshop that I'll remind you about when we get started today, I had to make a trip over to Dallas, and it needed to be on a Monday. I'll just leave it at that. And go to Dallas and back on a Monday and spend a couple hours there and produce a show. Not happening. Not happening at all unless I go back to the mobile studio, which means low live streams, right? So anyway, that's why you got a live a rewind yesterday. What are we going to talk about today? Today's going to be the variety type shows we usually do on Mondays, because I don't want to leave that out because, well, just to be honest, you hoodlums, that's when you guys all show up. So today, we're going to talk about some interesting stuff. At least I think it's interesting. I think you will, too. I wouldn't have picked it. Number one, turns out Islam is not a fan of LGBTQ what the ever, right? Whatever the hell it is now, like IA blah, 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 plus, you know, cubed. And you ask somebody what it means, and even the people that are fans of it tell you, I don't know what it means anymore. But they had their flag, and not the completely, well, I guess all of them, but the one they're upset about is the plain old rainbow flag banned by a city, a Detroit area city, which is it means it's near Detroit, but it ain't Detroit proper. Well, you know, they this particular city, they elected a town council. It's 100% Muslim. And then the Muslims turned around and decided that the gay flag was not appropriate for their cultural norms. And of course, the gay community and the trans community and all of these people, they stand in dismay. They don't understand. You realize how dumb that is. It's up there with Queers for Palestine. Even if you're pro-Palestine, I get it. But this idea that these people have on the left, that everybody who ain't us is on their side, is kind of crazy. The enemy of my enemy is my friend only goes so far. I guess they're going to learn that the hard way, FAFO and whatnot. Trump's got a new drug deal. Does it really mean anything? Truth is, we don't know yet, but I'll bring it up anyway. And I'll come at it from a couple different angles. Not certainly all pro-Trump, because, you know, Mark Cuban has a pretty low price buy your drugs platform already. So Trump's announcing his own drug platform, Trump RX, but supposedly these deals are for much broader than just that. So we'll see. But there is a positive angle in, do tariffs make sense? And I'll explain when we get to that one. Vietnam has decided to require biometrics for bank accounts. And the way it worked is it said, you know, if you don't do this, then you can only do transactions up to so much per transaction and so much per day. And it was like a few hundred, it was like a couple hundred bucks U.S. dollars. It sounded like a lot of money, but that's in Vietnamese currency. It was a couple hundred dollars in U.S. money and about $500-$600 daily. So, I mean, there'd be a lot of people that would have to pay their rent two separate transactions 2 days in a row to skate under this. But then they just went and nuked like 80 million bank accounts, just deleted them. For people that didn't comply with this biometric shit. And strangely enough, the only press covering it is Vietnamese press and press in the United States that is Bitcoin-centric. They just had 80 million bank, 83 million, 88 million, something like that, bank accounts deleted by the Vietnamese government. NBC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, no interest in it. Oh, by the way, Fox News, Newsmax, no interest in it. Hey, it doesn't bother. Hey, it's all, don't pay attention to that. We're going to pay attention to it. American corporations are responding to $100,000 H-1B visas from the Trump admin, which is only a one-year program, I might remind you. with threats to fully offshore their work to India. I'm going to tell you why. In some cases, that actually is a viable alternative. Some cases, it really doesn't matter. Even if they do it, we're still better off. And then I'm going to tell you about literally probably a million jobs that you ain't doing it. And it'll make sense when I share. Because remember, all the way back in January, I found a website where you could search all everybody's H-1B job postings. And this, well, it's the genius visa, this super-duper triple PhD programmers. We found out that was bullshit. So I'm going to have to remind some people of it. And I want to know how you're going to outsource your associate professor, your research assistant, et cetera, that works on a college university to India, or your student body recruiter to India. How are you going to put it up? You're not. Well, there can't be that many of those jobs. I'll just show you one or two universities, show you their listings, and we'll just put that shit to bed. Then, well, the UK has been really mouthy lately. Stammer has been really mouthy with Trump. Every time Trump goes anywhere near the UK or the EU and they engage in discussions with the UK, Stammer or one of his people cannot help but run their mouth about their concerns about freedom of speech in America, because you're a big mean orange man and people can't speak, while they walk through the streets and call Trump fascist, Nazi, Hitler, etc., and nothing happens to them. But in the UK, if you make the wrong post on like X or Facebook or, you know, UK Screwbook or whatever the hell it is, they can throw you in prison. I'm going to show you a guy that went to prison for 2 years that made no claims about violence, but the judge still said it's clear that's what you wanted. And threw this man in prison for 2 years for posts on, I believe, X. And there wasn't anything in them that wasn't true that didn't actually happen. Even if there were, don't tell us about free speech, assholes. Don't tell us about free speech. We might have to play freaking Americans in Redcoats again if you keep that shit up. Next up, I got a couple good things to talk about at the end today. That's how I get you to listen to good shit. I tell you all the bad shit so you'll show up, and then I'll tell you some good stuff. Pinion. Pinion is a new, truly safe and effective antifungal and antibacterial product, but it's from the regenerative ag people. It's actually from one of my favorite people in the regen ag movement, which is a guy named John Kempf. And the only reason John Kempf is not on the Survival Podcast is he refuses to fill out the guest form completely. Because I invited him, he said yes, and then he put his name and his email and his phone number on it, and that was it. And that's not complete. But I still love John, and I love what he's doing. And he has a really great organization. And they have this new product out, Pinion, that they have incredible results from the trials. And it's available in a bunch of states have approved it. A bunch of states haven't. When I tell you what's in it, if your state's not on it, you might want to contact somebody in your state and ask them why they're afraid of freaking citric acid and freaking cinnamon oil. Because it's way more effective than the toxic shit that they're spraying on your food all the time. It's been incredibly effective. And every agricultural concern has this problem. We have all kinds of problems with bacteria and fungi invading leaves and damaging crops. And there's ways to do it without a product like this, but there's a lot of operations, even if they're doing everything right, they are years away from getting there. Because what it's about is building up the soil until the Brix levels in your plants are so high that they're no longer affected by this. We need a bridge. This product is a beautiful bridge. And I'll tell you what, a lot of products from AEA, which is John's organization, are perfect for this. This is just one of them I wanted to share with you, and that's Advancing Eco-Agriculture, AEA. And you can look them up at advancingecoag.com and learn more about them. But, of course, there'll be links to everything today in the audio notes. There's a link down in the video notes if you're watching the video. If you're live, it won't work yet. We're not done. But about a half hour after we wrap up, it'll work. And if you're listening to the audio, that means it's already up. All you got to do is go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and look up episode 3739. And if it's today, it'll be right at the top. And you can find all this information, all these links. And then I have an interesting one for you. And I already had somebody, longtime friend of the show. We go back over a decade with these folks. Reach out to me and ask about coming on the show. And I need to get back to her and suggest that she put in a guest app probably next month because we're closed for booking. We are booked past the workshop. That's how far out we're booked right now. But she hit me up and said, thank you for posting this. But I posted a meme on Facebook, shared it from someone else who had posted it, who thought it was very virtuous. And it's about mothers sacrificing for their kids. And I'll explain it better and I'll put it on the screen when we bring it up. But it's, well, the picture is a good way to drown while you try to save a baby. And when you drown, the baby drowns too. And the metaphor actually works, but not as intended. I want to talk to you today about this idea that we should sacrifice for our children and how, while there is nobility in the idea of itself, that every parent in some way that's a good parent certainly sacrifices at times for their children, when we sacrifice to our own damage, when we put ourselves in the position that this meme has, we're not good parents or good people. It's not good for us, and our lives get hollow. And this was angled from the motherhood mama bear shit that everybody has to, like, turn into superheroes that don't wear capes and shit, so over the top. You know, maybe if we didn't glorify being a single mom, there wouldn't be so many of them. And I'm not saying anything against anybody that's a single mom. God bless you, and I wish you the best. I'm just saying we've lionized it. When we lionize things, we tend to get more of it. Whether you're doing this as a single parent, and there's dads that chimed in on this one, too, that feel the same way. So it can be either side as a single parent, or it can be a parenting couple. This is a very detrimental thing. And this is actually, I think, why you see so many marriages manage to last until children are either young adults or almost young adults. They're in that teen stage where they don't really need their parents anymore. And when you don't have all of the sacrifices that were really maybe not the best ideas in the first place to distract you with, husband and wife look at each other and don't know each other. They don't even know who they are anymore. They don't know who they are, and they don't know who their partner is. And that divorce rate is much higher among couples that have children when the children are in their mid-teens to early 20s than it is when those kids are young. And you think they're just staying together for the kids, and they kind of are, and that's part of the problem. But there's also a lot more to this, a lot of layers to this one. So I'm going to go a little bit Dr. Jack Phil in the last segment today. Before we do that, let's talk about our sponsors of the day and a couple of real quick reminders of some things as well. Number one, the workshop, the TSP fall workshop. If you hadn't heard yet, it ain't because I ain't tried to reach out to you and get it, if you've registered to come anyway, is moving back to Nine Mile Farm. We're doing it here on our property again. In spite of my efforts to move it, I lost the venue with YMCA due to a problem that there was no point in going into. It's a problem I cannot rectify. I can basically have the venue a week later, and I already have people with plane tickets and vacation requests in, and I can't move the dates, but I can move the location. We've done it here since 2013 was our first one. We know how to do it here. It'll be fine. It's just a different place for you to show up and park your car. That's it. Just a reminder, though, that it happened. And if you go to the site, you can scroll down and find a post about it. And you should have gotten an email telling you about it if you're a paid student. And if you're not a paid student, it doesn't affect you at all anyway. The other thing, just for general audience knowledge, you won't see me on X much this week unless you see me from my old-ass backup account. I went to X-Prison. The X-Prison, they put me in X-Jail for a week. Well, it's a big offense, man, a week. Why did they put me in X-Prison? You want to guess? Is it for some outlandish political post? Is it for my "those days are over" hashtags? Is it because the cat got deported? No, it's not because of that. That was one of the funniest posts I think I ever did. I put it on Facebook because I'd already been deported from X, temporarily deported from X. I'll tell you about the cat deported thing if I think about it later on because I want to get into the meat of the show. No, what I did is somebody posted a video of these freaks, these furry freaks, and there's a guy that's like the owner of the furry, the dog furry in this case, with a leash around his neck, and they're at like a convention center or something. And the idiot in the dog costume is flipping out like a kid having a tantrum, like a dog that's being drugged by a leash, and his partner, I'll use that term loosely, his partner's dragging him down the hallway. And everybody's like, I don't think this is safe. And I'm like, I don't care if this is safe. Somebody said, well, what if he gets choked? I said, we all kind of hope that he, she, they, them, person, place, or thing gets choked. The disrespect to the pronouns crowd was not what got me banned. It was considered violence, an endorsement of violence. These idiots post this video of one man dragging another man in a dog costume, flailing around like a complete lunatic. That's acceptable content, saying, yeah, I hope he does get choked. That's an endorsement of violence. Okay, whatever. And Elon saved free speech. Okay, sure he did. Yeah, okay, bullshit. Anyway, let's talk about our sponsors of the day real quick before we get into the meat of today's show. Number one today is JM Bullion. Have you paid attention to inflation? Have you looked at the prices on silver and gold as of lately? The silver ask price, which is how much people are asking on the sell side, $46.64. $46 silver's at. Gold, $3,850. If you've been paying attention, you know, metal's on a run, man. Because I endorse Bitcoin so heavily, people think that maybe my endorsement of silver or gold has fallen off. It hasn't. I've always said 5% of your net wealth in silver and or gold. There's a lot of you out there that have been following my advice that had about 5% of your net wealth in silver or gold a couple years ago. And now you got 10% because it's damn well doubled in value. That's okay. That's a good thing. Don't worry about it. I say 5 to 10%. What, you know, you get up in that 10% range, you might start redirecting your new dollar investment money into other options like Bitcoin. But definitely keep stacking silver and gold. It has always been money, and the best place to get it is JM Bullion. Been our sponsor since 2013. That's, what, 12 years? 12 years in the world of podcasting. Discount for MSB members. All orders ship free. If there's a problem ever, I can go directly to the president of the company. So why would you buy from anybody else? Next up today, it's one thing to protect your wealth, but what about your privacy and your ability to access information, including your own information when you're not at home? With Start9, you can do that. You can also communicate in a fully encrypted manner. You can run your own Bitcoin node. You can run your own Lightning node. You can basically become your own systems administrator, and all it requires is enough knowledge to install apps, configure them, and use them on a smartphone. If you can run apps on your smartphone, and I just bet you can, boomers, I bet you can, then you can do this. It's not that hard. Check them out today at start9.com. They do 9% off, by the way, for members of the MSB with our discount code. And you can get additional percentages off by using a Fold card when you buy one and stack those two together by using a Fold gift card for Start9 to make your purchase. And that'll save you in the neighborhood of like 14-15% if you're an MSB member. Plus you use Fold. Plus you get the points back with the Bitcoin back as points. So that's all good to go. So check them out today, Start9. And again, I know it sounds really technical. It's not that hard. Hey, if you're coming to the workshop, Jesse Tegmeyer is going to be in, you know, setting up and running a Start9 server right here and showing you how to use it. So that'll be good as well. All right, with that, let's get into it. Let's start off with, turns out that Muslims are not pro-LBTGQI whatever alphabet people. Turns out they're not. Turns out that people that live in other countries under Sharia law that literally, okay, this is not made up in any way, shape, or form. Literally, there are countries where you can legally be sentenced to death by being thrown off a building for being caught in a gay act. Okay? And they're Muslim. There's no country that isn't Muslim that has such of a law, or that you can legally be stoned to death for a gay act. Okay? They're all Muslim countries. So just, I don't know where these people have been, what rock they've been under. But it turns out that Muslims in general do not endorse the LGBTQ plus whatever pride fag crap. So here's what happened. This city in Detroit, the Detroit area, called Hamtramck, is completely and totally controlled now by Muslims on the city council. Not a majority. Every single member of the city council of this city is a Muslim. Well, back, let's get rid of this AP propaganda bullshit here, and I am using AP as a source. Back about a year ago, the city council passed a law saying only certain flags could be flown. In fact, five of them, and those include the American flag and the Michigan flag. I don't know what the other three are, but it'd be interesting to know that. I wasn't able to determine that getting ready today, but I'll look that up for you, and if it's relevant, I'll bring it up to you. But the mayor is also Muslim, Amir Ghalib, native to Yemen, and these people all together decided that they didn't want the gay flag flown by any city government, right? So in 2021 and 2022, the pride flag was flown by the city city hall out on their stuff to support, you know, Pride Month and things like that. Well, the Muslim Council got together and voted to ban it. And then this interesting part, this is why you're hearing about it now, because they did this about a year ago. It just went to the courts, and the court said, yeah, they can do that. Turns out cities can decide what flags can and cannot be flown at City Hall. I'm not even saying I disagree with the council on this. The only way I say that I agree with it fully, though, would be to know what the other three flags are they're allowed to fly. Okay? And that might be a little bit of important information there. So that's why I'm not going to pull out. But the idea that you can have a city government, a democratically elected council, say that when it comes to making statements at the city level using city assets that everybody pays for, the voters elected us, and we said, hey, this is the purpose of putting flags out in front of our city hall. And these are the flags that qualify. That I agree with, because if they can't do it, then who can? The irony to me, though, is that these people are actually shocked. But wait a minute. We campaigned on rights. We helped these people get elected because they did, right? The liberal population of this city worked hard to get these people elected because, God forbid, a Republican get in office. You know, they would turn the whole thing into a fascist shithole and kill everybody tomorrow, even though, you know, apparently fascists run the country and that's not happening and what have you. But for these people to be surprised by this, I hate to say it, but it's not surprising. I've been saying this for a long time now. The left is aligning themselves with people that want to kill them while claiming people that just want to try to figure out how to deal with their bullshit want to kill them. They act like we want to kill them. Now, I'm not saying that every person in the United States is a Muslim wants to kill gay people. And somebody will claim that's what I am not saying that. What I am saying is, in general, the militant branch of Islam would get rid of every gay person if they could. And then each level below that militant level, there's a varying degree of tolerance. But the tolerance for this lifestyle choice by the Muslim community is damn near zero, as in we fully accept you. I haven't seen a lot of imams talking about how we should fully accept. You know, I've seen gay female pastors of supposed Christian churches, which is nonsense. I'll say something about that in a minute, so I'll put a pin in it. Okay, I ain't seen any of that, right, at any mosque. Now, on the Christian thing, you might be like, Jack, but you're not a Christian, and you actually are for gay rights if it's actually rights, right? Not like, you know, controlling things or whatever, but like, should people just be treated the way they are based on their value that they bring to society, you know, whether or not they are decent other people, to dudes be able to get married if they want to? Sure, I don't care. However, I also have common sense, logic, and reason. So if you're going to be a pastor of a Christian church, you should be talking about Christian doctrine, and that is not Christian doctrine. I'm not a Christian. I don't have to defend the conflict. This idea that all of a sudden we're just going to start changing churches and putting in lesbians as pastors and having them tell their congregation, hey, we have to accept all this. I don't know how y'all are tolerating it. because there is no biblical case for it. Could you make a biblical case for live and let live? Sure. But for embracing the ideology and bringing it into your church, no, you can't. This is what's going on with those people before we move on to the next story. It's almost exclusively women or gay dudes. They're almost exclusively white that are doing it, by the way. Okay? It's about them. They're making the issue about them and what they want. I'm being dead serious here. I'm not being facetious. I'm not playing devil's advocate or whatever just because I don't believe in the Christian faith. I fully and wholly believe that if you embrace a religion, you embrace that religion. And I consider the Christian religion one of the greatest religions in the world and having done the most for humanity, though I can make a case for some pretty bad shit, dude, that has happened, but it's well into the past. Okay? And being a pastor, being a priest, being a minister, whatever that, you know, denomination calls it, is a very serious and very important job. And that job is about the people that you serve as a minister, priest, etc., right? And it doesn't matter if you're a rabbi in the Jewish faith, the same. If you're a monk in the Buddhist faith, the same. If you're an imam in the Islamic faith, the same. The job is not about you. It's about God and the relationship between how you view God and your flock, your parishioners. And you must be the most humble in the relationship because you're acting as an intermediary in a way. And so everything that you do should be about bringing the message as it was delivered by what you believe your faith to be to the people who came to your church or your synagogue or whatever. Yeah? And somebody that makes that about themselves is not suited to have the job. Anyway, that's not going to solve anybody's problems. It's just how I feel about it since it happened to come up there. All right, so next up, I want to talk about Trump's deal. And, of course, the media will immediately make it out like Trump's just trying to profit off of it. And I don't know anything about this Trump RX site. I just heard about this morning. It was a last-minute ad here, so you know, give me some grace on that. But I immediately discount the headline that's in every major leftist news organization that this is all about Trump's RX site. What I have been able to ascertain, the Trump administration and Trump himself issued an executive order at the beginning of his term. And it basically told drug makers, you better get shit together. And what the call was for fairness. And what he said is you need to give the if you're an American drug manufacturer or drug company doing business in America, either one, the United States of America should get effectively what we call most favored nation status. What does most favored nation mean? It means it doesn't get any better in how you're treated. So most favored nation status does not mean that you are actually above others. It means that no one's above you. You can have most favored nation status for 100 countries. They're all the same. You understand that? So when they talk about Nixon giving most favored nation status as an immigration partner with the United States back in the 70s, that's what they mean. That didn't mean China was given an advantage over everybody else. It means any disadvantage was removed. So in that executive order, what he's telling Pfizer and Merck and all these companies is, if you sell these drugs to Germany or Switzerland or Italy or China or Japan for, let's say, $1 a dose, whatever the lowest price is you give any other country should be the price you're selling your drugs for here. Of course, the media is telling you right out of the gate, well, the drug manufacturers who suddenly are the good guys, right? Like the giant corporations that have been bilking the country for years are suddenly the good guys because you can paint them against Trump. Right. And it was amazing how quick that became the case during the COVID years. The media talked shit about the drug companies nonstop until 2019. And then all of a sudden they were Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. Right. But they never talked that much shit about them because they spend so much damn money advertising on their news networks. They get more than half their ad revenue comes from one sector, and that's pharmaceuticals. Look that shit up if you doubt me. So that kept it in order. But they didn't, like, hold them up like baby Simba with the baboon. Ah! And now all of a sudden, like, Pfizer executives like baby Simba, You know, you hang out and everybody, you know, bow down and kiss his ass or something like that. But they're saying that if they do that, it could limit access to drugs and be a financial hardship. No, wait a minute, motherfuckers. I'm sorry. Shut your freaking mouth, because here's how this works. If you can't make money selling that drug in Germany or selling that drug in the EU as a whole or selling it in Australia or selling it in Japan, why are you selling it there? Well, the answer is you are making money selling it there. You're just not making the same profit you are here, and you're willing to take that lower profit at the expense of your biggest market, which is America. That's what it means. In other words, we're socializing the rest of the world. We're socializing medicines to the rest of the world. You're paying, let's say, $40 a dose for a drug that somebody in Japan is paying $2 a dose for the drug. And not because Japan is paying the rest of the money, the $38 in between. I'm saying the total cost for that drug to be delivered to the patient, no matter who pays the bill, $2 here, $40 here. And that $2 may only make you like 10 cents per dose. You sell millions of doses, that's still a shitload of money. But the reason you're willing to do it in Japan at that price is because you're able to rip off this country and our people. And they go, but these other countries have pricing controls. You know what? Screw them then. You come up with what is an actual fair price. You make it uniform to everybody. And if Japan says, well, we have a pricing control, then don't buy it. Because if they need it, they'll buy it. And if you can sell it at the price they're setting the control at there, then you can do it here too. And I don't want to hear your bullshit. So this is overall on the surface a good thing. There's a problem that Trump genuinely has, though, with a lot of things that look good on the surface. They don't have enough depth in them to control the reaction. So what will the reaction be here? We don't know yet. Pfizer apparently bent the knee and said, here's our pricing. And the admin said, that's good. We'll take it as a win. One day after the deadline, by the way. This was supposed to be done by yesterday, and it got done this morning. That's interesting timing. Which means the other drug companies will probably begin to bend the knee as well, because Pfizer is the biggest dog in the hunt. But will it actually help the price of medication? I don't know. But this is what I will tell you about it. And this is important that you understand. This is the real ramification you need to understand, is how the media is angling everything right now. If Barack Obama had made this exact same deal in, let's say, 2012 or 2013, they would have rebooted the children's choir, the kids. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go to YouTube and search for Kids Sing to Obama. You'll probably still find it. There's these kids they had at a school, and this retarded teacher conducting it. And yes, we can. Yes, we can. And they were singing like a worship song to a presidential candidate at the time, which is really a sick thing to happen in America. Well, they would have rebooted that. They would have had that everywhere. There would have been 100 kids' choirs out there singing about praises to Obama for how he helped everybody. This is what I keep saying about Trump. Trump is a 90s Democrat. This is an absolute centrist, populist Democrat, as in the DNC policy, before the liberals completely lost their minds. So I'm not necessarily 100% for it, but if you're a Democrat, or you call yourself a centrist or a moderate, and you oppose this, it's because it's Trump. Because in any other universe, they would be singing praises, and they would be singing praises to the tariffs. All these liberals that all of a sudden don't like taxes, don't like tariffs. Like, a tariff is just a tax. Bullshit, you fuckers love taxes, right? But, you know, the American people pay it. Well, actually, the importer pays it. Okay, well, yeah, but they pass it on. Well, that's true of all the taxes, all the ones you're for. Because the importers are never poor, right? They're always companies that make a lot of money, or they wouldn't be importing shit to make a lot of money off them. I know some small businesses directly import, but the vast majority of product imported in this country are imported by companies like Amazon and Walmart and Costco and giant companies that, if we were putting a giant tax on that company, then the liberals would love it. They would be singing praises about it, unless Trump did it. Then they'd find a reason it was wrong. When we put a tariff on companies like that, I'll tell you the difference. You can say the corporate tax rate is any number you want. That corporation is never going to pay that number. there's the official rate, and then there's the effective rate. After I'm done with all my accounting, after I'm done with all my subsidies, after I'm done with all the loopholes, after I'm done with all the ghost deductions, the depreciation deductions, depreciating the value of buildings while it's actually going up and taking it off my income, et cetera. After I'm done with all of that, you know, I'm going to pay a lot less tax on the tariff, whatever that tariff is. That company's fucking paying it. So I'm not even for it directly anyway, and it's certainly not blanket case, right? All I'm saying is the people that are most against it, you have nothing to stand on. You've been pro-tax the corporations forever. And when you say, but the customer pays the tax because the company passes on the tariff, what the fuck do you think they do with an income tax, the part that they have to pay? You don't think that's a line item in a cost analysis for product delivery, what we're going to be paying in taxes on the profit? Do you think that's left out by companies that manage money down to the fraction of a cent? Oh, yeah, but the 30% tax we're going to pay. No, fuck that. We don't care about that. You're out of your mind. So, yes, the tax will be passed on to the customer in the end. At least as much of it as the company can do and still sell the product, because competition still matters. And you still got to get people to pay you. Even if you don't have a competitor, the customer starts to say at a certain price, I don't know if I really need that thing. So within that boundary, every tax is passed on to the consumer. And it's amazing that the second somebody who they don't like does it, okay, they see the reality. But whenever somebody who they do like is doing it, they ignore the reality and say, that's just the rich paying their fair share. The rich are never going to pay their fair share because in the history of histories, they never have paid their fair share. All right, moving on to another country being scumbags, Vietnam came out with this policy, and of course it's to protect people. It's for your own good that we deleted your bank account. The reasoning behind this is one-time passwords, double authorization, two-factor authorization, passwords, etc. They don't work good enough to protect people. So we need biometrics. Every single person in Vietnam has been told for over a year now, you need to basically have a scan of your face uploaded. You need to have your driver's license, your national identification card uploaded to your bank. By the way, that we already kind of have that in the United States. They just don't call it biometrics. They call it KYC. And they very quietly just had the bank start requiring the photo ID upload. And then you have to take a picture of yourself when you open an account now that matches you. So they know if you do it online, you have to do it that way. And they say, of course, why would they do that? Because somebody could get your information, but they can't get your face, which, of course, is a lie. I could always create a picture that isn't really me and say it is me for identity theft. So it doesn't really do anything. So we already do this here. But this is the interesting thing, and this is how so many people just got really blindsided in Vietnam by this, is that when this was originally passed, it's 86 million. I wanted to make sure. Vietnam commercial banks began removing 86 million bank accounts in early September 2025 after the State Bank of Vietnam enforced new biometric requirements. Authorities say the policy targets accounts lacking face or fingerprint verification, aims to curb fraud, cybercrime, and money laundering. Yeah, because that's what 86 million Vietnamese people are doing. Most of them who make less money than the poverty rate in the United States. Sure, that's what they're doing. No, that's not. They're doing it for control. But what they had done and what they said up until they just did this huge crackdown was, well, you don't have to do it. But if you don't do it, then your account will be limited. You'll have to do things. You have to go to the bank in person. You can take cash out and you can go do things, but you won't be able to have electronic transfers over a certain amount of money. And it was about per transaction, a little under $200 US and, per day, about $600, per day. And if you wanted more than that, you had to do the biometric thing. So a lot of people in Vietnam said, well, okay, then I'll only use the bank when I have to, and I'll abide by those, and I'll allow those restrictions to happen to my account. Well, that wasn't what the State Bank of Vietnam expected to happen. They expected everybody to comply, especially in a country like Vietnam, where there's such a holistic population, a very uniform population. Pretty much everybody's homogenized in Vietnam. They don't have the diversity that other countries have. They have some people there who are, you know, expats that live there permanently. But most Vietnamese, if you're a Vietnamese citizen, you're born in Vietnam, you're Vietnamese ethnically, you know. And so they have that homogenous society. And Asian societies tend to be more conformist than non-Asian societies due to oppressive government, but also just cultural go-along-to-get-along type. You comply. Well, 80 million plus people didn't do it. So they said, fine, we'll just delete your bank account to protect you. Yeah, and I wonder why it's only like Bitcoin Magazine and other cryptocurrency publications that are running this that are U.S.-based media. I was unable to find a single mention of this on any major U.S. news platform. Not AP or Reuters for sure, not MSNBC, not CNN, not Fox News, nobody. But I wasn't able to find it internationally either, except for Vietnam publications. Times of India, they're not interested in talking about it. Russia Today, they're not interested in talking about it. Canadian news sources, not you know why? Because they all plan to do one version or another of this shit too. Or, you know, if you cover it in America, America's like, that's some bullshit right there. And then and Martha tells Henry, Henry, didn't you recently when you did something with the bank account, didn't they require you to do that actually? Martha, I think you're right. Holy shit. Look, guys, if you are not holding some independent wealth, and that includes cash, that includes tools and things that you would call assets that are real hard things you can put your hands on, that includes silver and gold, and that includes Bitcoin. You are so vulnerable to this. You are so vulnerable to this. Now, even Bitcoin and crypto, they can regulate the hell out of the on and off ramps, but since I can transfer directly to you, it's that's why they hate it. That's one of the reasons Trump is hated, is because he's pro this at all. Because this is still the most rebellious thing against the global system of control there is to have something that moves at the speed of light, that cannot be restricted or stopped, that can be transferred from one person to another, and they're literally, no matter what they say, they're literally at the damn thing they can do to stop it. They hate that, right? And shut up about Monero, dude. I'm sick of you people, right? I don't care about your shit coin of choice. Monero is not as private as you think it is, and it doesn't have the freaking acceptability and the liquidity that Bitcoin does. So if you want to put yourself into a shitcoin because you think it's private, go ahead and do it. But no, it's not looking any better than it ever did, and it's a great way to lose money. But you go ahead and do what you want with that information. If you want to preserve your wealth, then there's only one number one, and there's no place for number two. And by the way, if there was a number two, it ain't Monero. I'm sorry. It just isn't. Go try to buy something with it. See how it works out for you, unless you're dealing with another crypto whatever anarchist or something that likes it too. You ain't gonna get it. I'll take it from you. It'll go straight to my exchange account and get turned into Bitcoin, except that's getting hard to do because it's getting delisted from exchanges. You do what you want, because I know who you are, and we've talked plenty, and you just keep, bro, grow up. And it ain't to do with your decision on Monero, okay? It's your all-over-the-world flaky shit. Anchor down on something. If it's going to be Monero, do it in spite of what I say. But quit being back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, because that's lukewarm, and I'm not a religious man, but there is a whole line about being spewed out of my mouth for the lukewarm. Anyway, it's a one-off. I shouldn't even go there. All right, next up, let's talk about H-1B visa thing. This is a really interesting angle to me. So Trump visa curbs push U.S. firms to consider shifting more work to India. In other words, if you won't let us bring the Indian to America, we'll put the work in India. Well, first of all, you assholes, you've already done that on a level that's unprecedented. They're in a whole lot of shit that they're not doing in India right now that they can do in India. right? They bring the Indians in to take the Americans' work, but there's still a lot of oversight that has to be done by people that are U.S. citizens. Because, well, if you've ever worked with the people that they bring in, you'd understand why. So now what you have to do, if you want to actually outsource all the work to India beyond what you've already done, you got to talk Bill and Tom into going and living in New Delhi. Because they have to still oversee the entire workforce. They're not bringing these people on in on H-1Bs to run the damn divisions. They're not. Some here and there are capable of it. I'm not putting people down. There's, you know, over a billion of them. If you have a billion plus population, some are going to be exceptional, no matter what. But I'm sorry, if you've ever worked, because I have. Like, we'll just get this coded by, you know, some folks over in India, and you get these coders, and they seem like they know what they're doing, and the coding's never right, it's never done, they always want more money, and if you can't put them in a chair and tap them on the shoulder and say, listen, dickhead, I said fix that, it doesn't get fixed. But there's more to this than just that. It's the sheer number, okay, it's the sheer number of jobs that are not outsourceable, and they are not what supposedly H-1Bs are. I have right here, this is H-1B Salary Database 2025. H-1Bdata.info is where you can find the site. And you can look up literally every job posting under the H-1B program that companies are trying to fill in this country. And I just pulled up Columbia University. This is how many jobs, and those who aren't looking at it, I'm like multiple screens of scrolling here of jobs. Paying anywhere from well over $100,000 down into the $60,000 to $70,000 range. This job right here, an associate professor, assistant professor, pays $425,000 at Columbia University. We can't find an associate professor at Columbia University that wants to make $425,000 that's qualified to teach these doorknobs, whatever Columbia is teaching them. Assistant professor, by the way. Assistant professor. $4.25 million a year. Assistant professor, right? There's a lot of assistant professors. I'd say there's well over 100 of them. Administrative laboratory director of IVF, $253,000 a year at Columbia. So this is Columbia. Okay, now you ain't outsourcing this, Columbia. You ain't outsourcing this. And if I go back, I mean, the most interesting ones, the easiest layups are universities. Was the University of Michigan. Let's see what they got going on. 3,300 postings under H-1B. Assistant programmer, analyst intermediate. We don't have anybody that can do that job. No Americans are capable of that, right? Application developer. At least these sound like they make sense. But let's see if we keep going. If we get back into arts program manager. They need an arts program manager, $86,000 a year. An arts education program coordinator, $58,000 a year to be an art education program coordinator. I'm going to bet that job's not hard. I'm going to bet there's plenty of people at Columbia that would love that as a starting job after they get their degree or would take that job while they work on their degree. You know, assistant professor, here we go. There's where we start the assistant professors. Oh, look at them. There's over 100 assistant professorships open at University of Michigan under H-1B. How are you gonna freaking move University of Michigan? You're gonna move them to India? Really? Now, there is a problem here. There is a problem with the overall plan. It will only be so effective. Because the majority of the tech work, if you really, really want to, if you're willing to make the sacrifices, if you're willing to pay the people capable of overseeing the projects to live in India, right, you can move them there because the tariffs have no effect. The tariffs have no effect because there is nothing to import. Software, you don't have to import software. You have to import hardware. But you don't have to import software. Tech platforms do not need to be imported. There is no, they don't go on a boat and get shipped over. So there is, and this is what I was referring to earlier, when I said one of the problems that Trump really does have is that a lot of his ideas that sound okay do not seem to be well thought out as to the second and third level and fourth level effects. Like, okay, you do this, and that has a reaction, and that reaction is what you're looking for, but what is the reaction to the reaction? What comes next? So this was something I said when this came out. The program overall was decent. Republicans would have loved it if it wasn't, Mnuchin, I think it was, that announced it, didn't screw it up and said it was annual. Well, what he really meant was it's annual as in we're doing it for a year, and it could be renewed for another year each year, but is a temporary government program. And Trump did that, and I surmise that was why, but I've confirmed since. He did that because now it passes the legal threshold. If he had done it as an ongoing, eternal program, instead of something that could be renewed year by year, there was a very strong court case to shut it down. By doing it as a one-year program under emergency powers, right? To the chancellor, right? You know, I can't do Jar Jar, but you know what I'm talking about, right? The emergency powers concept, he's able to keep it from being successfully challenged in court. And that's why they did it that way. But what do you do about the companies that just say, okay, we're gonna go to India? Well, there are things that can be done, like, you know, phone calls from, you know, commerce secretaries and things like that going, I don't know if you really want to do this. You might want to think about it. But there's nothing that really stops a company from just putting more of their operations outside the country. The thing about that is, you're still not bringing in people to the country as workers displacing American workers. And a lot of these people come in on these jobs, and then once they get here, they're able to get toeholds in other places under those visas. It's going to be much harder to do that now, too. All right, moving on, though. Let's talk about the country that seems to have really keyed in on telling the United States that we really need to think about how we're handling freedom of speech here in America. This is a judge talking in a British court for those that are not on the video. And I'm going to play this for you now. In my opinion, this is pretty despicable.
Given Life of Riley off the tax us hardworking people earn when it could be put to better use.
I'm restarting it for you guys.
A post questioning why you wrote, because they're over here, given Life of Riley off the tax us hardworking people earn when it could be put to better use. Come over here with no work visa, no trade to their name, and sit down and DOS, and then there's more people being put out homeless each year. They get top banned priority on housing. You went on to say that you did not want your money going to immigrants who, quote, rape our kids and get priority, end quote. Although you said that you had no intention of carrying out any act of violence, there can be no doubt that you were inciting others to do so. Otherwise, why post the comment? You expressed remorse, but by that time, it was too late. For the offence of publishing written material in order to stir up racial hatred, there are sentencing guidelines which I must and will follow. The maximum sentence is 7 years imprisonment. In my judgment, this comes close to harm category one. However, for the purposes of this sentence, I will treat you as falling into category two, since there was no direct encouragement towards activity which threatens or endangers life. However, you fall towards the top of category two. For a category 2A offence, the starting point is 2 years imprisonment with a range between 1 and 4 years custody. In mitigation, I take into account your plea of guilty, for which you will receive full credit of 1/3, following your earlier admissions. I take account of the contents of the references from your mother, friend, and employer. These can only be of limited value in the current circumstances.
Okay, I can't listen to this fuckwad anymore. I can't let him. I'll just tell you the end of it is the guy got 2 years. 2 years in prison for a social media post that, by the way, be offended if you want, but is accurate. There are immigrants raping the children of UK citizens right now and mostly getting a pass for it. They are living off the taxpayers' money, more so than they are here. There are literally people losing their housing that are citizens in UK to migrants. By the way, they're not migrants. Do you know why I won't call them migrants? You know what migrates? Birds. Do you know what they do? They go to a place, they live there for a while, and then they go home. Migration, by its very nature, is something where animals go from one point to another and back seasonally. They just ruin every word they touch. It just sounds better, so we'll use that. We won't worry about what it means because they're all so stupid because we're the ones that educated them and told them they were smart. Anyway, they won't know that's a nonsensical word. But I don't even know if I would have put this on the air today. I actually got that video from Patrick Warman of MT Knives. He happened to text that to me either this morning or yesterday. I don't remember which one when he actually texted it, but I saw it this morning. And if the UK didn't constantly run their mouth about the importance of free speech in America, I probably just wouldn't even give a shit what happens to that piss hole anymore. And I told you back in 08, 09 that the UK had turned into a total piss hole. That's the exact words I used. And I got overwhelmed with emails telling me what a big meanie I was and I didn't know anything. And I'm like, just give it 10, 15 years and watch what happens. Here it is. You now have people that express their opinions. He in no way did this man call for violence. But it's clear that's what you wanted, even though you didn't do it. I'm telling you right now, if they had the laws here that they have in the UK right now, I'd be under the jail by now. I would have probably actually fled the country by now because I ain't going to prison for speaking my mind. And I know that I can do more if I'm out than if I'm in. But they would put charges on me, no doubt. I mean, I got 17 years of material they can comb through. Oh, and by the way, they're doing that too. Not everybody that's being charged with this committed the offense after these laws were passed. Sometimes these people are pissing off the government, and the government looks, and there's nothing current, even under their draconian standards, that they can guarantee a successful prosecution with. And they're digging through 10, 15 years of their shit to find one or two posts that they can make a case for, even though the law didn't exist at the time. And then they're doing what they did to this guy. And the UK is actually worse about doing this than the United States is. And we're bad. They're going in and saying, this is what we got. You could do 5 years. You better plead guilty. We'll give you some leniency. This dude probably thought leniency meant 6 months or probation or something. He got 2 years. I don't understand, there's a lot of shit that I'll defend Trump for and a lot of shit that I won't. But the way he treats a CNN reporter where he calls them fake news, tells them they're an oxygen to shut up, and if you don't stop talking, I'm never going to call on you again, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with that, and he lets somebody like Stammer come over in the freaking White House and say shit about free speech, and he'll push back a little bit, but if I were Trump, I'd be like, didn't you put over 12,000 people in jail in the last 12 months? Don't bring that shit up with me again. He should be harder on Stammer than Zelensky. Zelensky's a grifter because we taught him to be one. Stammer, he's supposed to be a co-partner equal with the United States. Okay? And if you don't want to do it in public, Trump, I understand it, but I guarantee you if you said, bro, come here, I'm going to talk to you before we go live here. You bring that free speech shit up with me again, this is what's going to happen to you on live television. I will be the next, you'll be the next person I take down. Where's that Trump when you need him? Where's that Trump with a bunch of these assholes pulling this shit? I mean, if you want to be disappointed by Trump, there's plenty of ways to be disappointed by Trump. I guess I'm less disappointed than most people because, as I said, I never really expected much out of him. Let's talk about a few good things here. Pinion is what this product is called. And it is by AEA, which is John Kemp's organization, Advancing Eco-Agriculture. And it is a disease control product. It's the first one AEA's put out. It's a direct disease control product. Most of the stuff AEA does are things that are designed to increase nutrient uptake in plants or provide nutrient that the soil is currently deficient in. And so those actually are disease treatments for plants because a plant with all the nutrients it needs is very disease resistant. Because if plants in their very nature were not disease resistant, we wouldn't have plants, right? So it's all about soil health. But as I said in the intro today, there is a place for bridges, a bridge to get to the next level. And most of the farms that are out there today trying to do the right thing, they're trying to go no-till. They're trying to go all organic, et cetera. Many of them have been farmed conventionally or under conventional organic processes for decades. The ground is in bad shape. It takes time to turn it around. And even as you're turning it around, one of the real banes to the existence, especially among a lot of things that are perennials, like you see here, grapes, and a lot of legumes too deal with this, is diseases that are either fungal or bacterial, and they get on the leaf and they infect the leaf. This product is incredibly effective. I'm going to show you some trial pictures in a minute of treated versus untreated. But this is a very effective product. And you can see how healthy these grapes are if you're on the video. But if you want to buy it, you go to shop. It's going to bring up this page right here, and it's going to give you state availability. And list isn't that long. It ain't even half the country. So I'm going to read the list, which is interesting to me because there's a big makeup of blue and red states here. California, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, and Texas. I was going to be pissed if Texas wasn't on this list. So I looked at that. And I was like, okay, so they have to get individually approved. I understand that. What is the hang up for the other, like, what, 35 states? That's about 15 states. Ingredients. Well, maybe there's something in this. I mean, it's John Kemp, and I trust John Kemp. But, you know, if I'm a state legislature, I don't know him from Adam. So maybe I need to do some research here. Here's what's in it. 1.4% citric acid, okay. 0.1% cinnamon leaf oil, inert ingredients, 98% glucose, vinegar, okay, so sugar and vinegar, lactic acid, okay, maltodextrin, which is basically another type of sugar, and water. Now, it would actually be completely legal to make this shit yourself, other though it might not be as effective because there's probably some proprietary way that they're creating, you know, some sort of bonds or emulsification or something going on in it so it'll do what it does the way that it's being done. But that's the ingredients. Not a single one of the, you know, he's just shitting the food you eat all the time. They say, well, yeah, that's fine because it's generally recognized as safe, GRS. Citric acid? Every sour candy you eat is made sour with citric acid. Citric acid is vitamin C. Cinnamon leaf oil? You can go buy gallons of cinnamon leaf oil in any state. And you know what else is legal in all the states not on the list for this product? Roundup, glyphosate. Yeah, that's all legal. And 100 other freaking, you know, serious, dangerous herbicides and pesticides are legal in these other states. But not citric acid and cinnamon oil and sugar and water? This just shows you how screwed up things are. Now, I did want to show you, this is not John's post, but he shared this post today from AEA. And this is the results of using this product. Day zero, right? You can see the leaf actually has a little bit already of something going on here. And they sprayed it. By day four, it looks like kind of like a powdery mildew type thing is really fading. By day 14, it's pretty much gone. There's a little tiny bit of yellowing on the leaf. But overall, that's a healthy plant that's going to produce well. The plants that were not treated in the same field, this plant is ready to die. This plant, and I dealt with grapes a lot as a kid because my grandfather was big on grapes because he liked wine. And this leaf, when a grape leaf looks like this, if you are somewhere that Japanese beetles are, they are going to demolish that plant. I mean, that is like a dinner bell because a plant is weak and it's mostly cellulose when these insects, these chewing insects, bite into a plant that's really well hydrated, it's got high Brix, which is how much sugar is in the sap. When they bite into it, it literally like clogs up their mouth parts. They don't like it. They want something that looks like that plant down in the right-hand lower quadrant. That's exactly what they're looking for. So you can see that not only has that got the disease problem, it's got a hell of a lot more pest pressure on it, which makes sense. So this product works. It's made from things that are completely legal everywhere, and there's no law that says you can't use cinnamon oil or citric acid on your plants in one of the states not on that list. But if you have somebody put it together in a bottle for you, we still need to work on improving it and make sure it's safe. I'm going to tell you guys, I really recommend that you learn more about the product offerings, in spite of the fact that John hadn't been on the show, at AEA, which is, again, advancingecoag.com. It's a fantastic group of products that there is nothing there that I would not say is at least worth a try. And there's nothing there that I would worry about harming anything on your property or producing food that you in any way wouldn't want to eat. There's a lot of stuff that AEA does too as well. That's more like you actually have sap tested and then they make specific product recommendations or even do custom mixes for you. But there's a lot of stuff that the home gardener can use that's kind of off the shelf. This works for everybody. And it's too bad that I didn't have John on the show. I really wanted to. But as you guys know, one thing I am not flexible about is guests that do not complete the form properly. At least he sort of kind of did it, but he didn't do it all the way. And it's amazed me how many times over the years I've had to have conversations with people who won't do it. I don't understand. You can't look at it right now because we took it down because we're not booking for about a month before we start booking again. But it's not a complicated thing to fill out. It's your name, your email address, your phone number. So like we can actually get you on the show and connect with you and schedule you. It's a guest bio and it's the things you want to talk about. Setup questions, call it what you want to. It could be talking points. It could be setup questions, anything. So I know what you want to talk about on my show. And I advise any podcaster and if you are a podcaster and you want to emulate my form, I will send you a back door to it so you can see what I do and you can create your own to do this. Because we enforce this policy, we have enforced it since 2010. We never, don't have a guest show up when they're supposed to. We never have a guest show up and it's deer in the headlights and they don't know what they're going to be talking about. And you would think that anybody that actually has any sort of agenda, whether it's to sell something or to sell an idea, no matter what it is, like it's a political agenda, it's a message agenda, it's a product agenda, it's a service agenda, anybody that actually wants to get a message out, you would think that that person would love the ability to have input on it and say, ask me about these things. And I'm going to tell you, you've never seen an interview where I only asked about the things that they sent me. But you've also never seen an interview where I've ignored the important things they want to talk about. And this all started, by the way, back when I interviewed Ron Hood, who is my late and one of my closest, dearest friends. The man was like a brother to me. And I think it was the second time I had him on the air. And we kind of ad hoc'd it. We usually pregame things when I'd have him on the air. And I did not have a guest for him yet. This is very early days. This is early 2010. Maybe it might have been even 2009. But no, it wasn't 2009. I didn't even do guests in 2009 because I was still in the car. So I just started doing stuff from home, had Ron on the show, And I realized 3 or 4 minutes into it, I can tell by his voice, because we didn't have video that we were doing back then. We did audio only. That he and I were he was on page 3 and I'm on page like 30 of the same book. Right. But we're in different chapters. We had no idea. Like, I knew what I wanted to talk about. He had no idea what I was asking him. He was answering a question as though I asked it differently than I did, because he was in a different frame of mind. And he was a friend. I mean, a close friend. This is a guy I talk to at least a couple, 3 times a week, one way or another. And I was like, if that can happen with him, that can happen with anybody, especially somebody asking to be on the air that I've never met before. So if you ever want to be on this show, and again, the guest form's down right now, but it will go back up in about a month, you fill out that form. And if you tell somebody you know, and I don't care who they are, let me tell you who filled out that form. Ron frickin' Paul filled out that form fully. Okay? Gary Vaynerchuk filled out that form fully. Adam frickin' Curry, who literally invented podcasting, filled out the form. Patrick Seaman, that I had on a couple weeks ago, who's, you know, the guy doesn't need me in any shape or form, filled out the form, right? If you're going to be on the air with me, you fill out the form. And I would love to hear from anybody out there, that even if you don't want to be on, but if you were going to be on, you would resist that. What the hell is the problem? Because I would say I get about 1 in 100 people that refuse, vehemently refuse to do it, and I've never heard anything approaching a reason. I've heard a lot of bullshit. Well, I don't want to do it. You should know what you want to ask me. Like, or they fill it out and it says talking points, whatever you want to talk about. It's delete. Right? What is the arrogance about? Because it's arrogance. It really is. It's extreme arrogance. To be like, yeah, whatever. When you're being offered a platform to let you talk to this many people. To be that way. And I'm not complaining. I'm dead honest asking you. Yes, Gerald Celente filled out the form. Mike Gazer filled out the form. I'm talking people that are, you know, a couple, 3, 4 times a year, sometimes once a month, are on Fox News or something. Fill out, and they don't have any problem with it. They're like, oh, that's great. I'll take care of it. Or I'll have my admin take care of it in some cases. But they do it. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And I'm not bitching. I'm literally – is there anybody out there can explain the psychology of this to me? All right, let's talk about something else. It does have some psychology in it, I think. This image right here is what spawned my post. And it was posted by a Facebook shill account, I'll grant you. But it was also shared. Somebody saw it and shared it that is in my community. But it said, this picture shows the sacrifice of a mother's love. Even while she's sinking in her own battles, she keeps her child above the water. Mothers will give up their own comfort and peace just to protect their children. It's a powerful reminder of the resilience and unconditional love that defines motherhood. Okay, there's a lot of bullshit in that. And if you can't see the video, I will do the best I can to describe it to you. And this is probably AI derived, and the people that made it have no idea what they're talking about, and they thought it was cool and would get attention, and I guess it did. But it is a long-haired woman in like a nightgown-type shirt. She's in the water. She's got her baby in one hand held up above the waterline. She's vertical in the water with her head back and her mouth and nose barely above the waterline. That's the best description I can give you without you seeing it, okay? And this is supposed to inspire you to how great it is for mothers to sacrifice for their children. I'm going to read to you what I said when I shared it. I said, sadly, this is a great way for both the mom and the baby to drown. I say sadly because this hits way too spot on for how many people, not just women, parent. The right metaphor is mom floats on her back with baby on her chest. I know what the artist went for. I am saying, sadly, it's too accurate as to how the misguided think they are helping by sacrificing for their children. I am sure everyone will hate that comment and yet make zero attempt to understand it. Every once in a while, I'm wrong, and I'm happy to be wrong. I was wrong here. I didn't have one person in the comments, and there were a lot of comments. I didn't have one person in those comments tell me I was wrong about that. what I had was a lot of people saying, yeah, you're right. Let me explain what I mean by it, because without seeing it, you know, there's 100-to-1 on the audio side at least here. So most people who listen to the show do not ever see video and all of the images that go with some stuff, like, especially a show like this where there's a lot of visual aids, I guess, that I bring in. What I mean is that we have, as a society, convinced people that you should sacrifice to the children to the point of your own suffering. And long term, and whatever it takes. And that is what is virtuous and noble. And I mean, the concept that springs to mind here for me is when you're on that airplane and they give you the little talk about the mask dropping, you know? And if you're with someone who requires assistance, put your mask on first. And inevitably, there'll be some kids on the plane, and there'll be some parents there that will say it under their breath, but loud enough to be heard for the purpose of being fucking heard, right? So that they can virtue signal to those around them. Well, hell with that. I'm putting on my kid first. And when you pass out, hopefully I'll be able to reach you and put your mask and your kid's mask on for you, because you went out because you didn't have enough oxygen to make it, and you should have put your mask on first, or your kid's sitting there crying, ripping their mask off and suffocating too, because you did get their mask on, but you didn't get your mask on. And your kid doesn't know what to do. You can't help somebody when you're completely down and out. You can't. You can't give your life for somebody and then continue to take care of them. So when people say, I would sacrifice my life for my kid, that can be quite noble if it's in the moment and there is no other choice. In other words, if somebody's trying to shoot my kid and I have to attack them and I could die by doing that, I'm going to attack them. And even if they take me out, I'm going to try, then we're both going. We're both going. Because even if you shoot me, I'm not done fighting. And I'm only doing that, though, because there isn't an alternative. Because I have to, at that moment, think this way. If I don't do this, they're dead. And there's nothing left for them. So it doesn't matter that I won't be here to take care of them, because they won't be here. That's the scenario where you make that ultimate sacrifice. By trying to stop that from happening to that kid and risking my own life, that is virtuous, in my opinion. That's what any parent should be willing to do. But instead, what that image conjures up in me is how so many people literally commit slow suicide through their life to supposedly help their kids. And there's more dynamics to this than one. One is there's a whole lot of people that are absolutely depressed and victimhood is their mentality, and they're able to use this as a shield, as an excuse for why they're so miserable and why they don't do the things that they should do and why they don't achieve success. And that's very true among single parents, but it's very true among couples as well. Well, you know, we have to take care of the kids. We have to make sure the kids can do this. No, what you have to do, if you want to be a good parent, is you have to be a good parent. And there are certain things a child needs that are material that must be provided by the parent. Food, shelter, water, education, basic safety. Basically, the survival, yes, you must do whatever it takes, including scrubbing shit out of toilets, to make sure your children eat. That, I no problem with. But the litany of bullshit that people claim they need to do or claim they need to not do so their kids can be happy and healthy is amazing. And what people do is the single parent will tend to ruin and destroy their soul. And I'm going to tell you, if you're ruining and destroying your soul, you're not a good mommy or daddy. Because what the little kid wants more than another baseball game to play in or another new shirt or pair of shoes or video game or whatever is time with mom or dad. And the time that that's true is actually a relatively short period of their life. As they hit 9, 10, they start to pull away. And by teens, they really pull away. You have a very narrow window between where you have a poop geyser that can't function and take care of itself, really can't communicate. And it grows into a young child beyond the toddler phase where you can actually sit down and talk to you. I mean, you're 4 or 5 years old. You can have conversations. You can read books back. The kid can read a few words back to you. He can say, Daddy, I want to do this. Mommy, I want to do that. That window from 5 to about 12, that's only 7 freaking years. that you get a kid that wants you more than they want any of the stuff. And the only reason you think they want the stuff is you taught them to want the stuff by not being there and using the stuff so you didn't have to be. While you claim to sacrifice, and a lot of times people are economically sacrificing because they're buying all this bullshit for their kids, and they're literally that woman in that video. Arm in the air, struggling to swim, but they chose it because they could put the baby on their chest and float. And this is a huge problem in our country. We have children that grow up effectively without parents, even though their parents are in the home and married. And I'm going to tell you what I've seen it happen so many times. And I've seen it almost happen, and I've seen it all the way happen. And that is, mom and dad do stay together for the kids. And the kids are in every activity. They play, you know, all the sports. They have all the extracurriculars. And literally, mom is taking one of the kids to one activity. Well, mom and dad aren't even together, but they're with the kids. But they're not really with the kids, because they're all they're doing is taking the kids to the thing and watching them do it. And the kids are really with their other kids and the coach. And in some ways, this is worse than what Gen X had. This is how it worked for us with all that, you know, soccer games and shit. Like, they might, the parents might come to your game. But practice? Yes, they got practice. You drop the kid off, it's like free daycare. Right? Because that's what the kid was doing at that point. They were with their peers and they were with their coach or whatever, or their, you know, dance teacher or music teacher or whatever it was. But I would say, as bad as it was for Gen X, we oversell it. Because the one thing, not really me, but most of my friends had, was at some point, mom and dad were there. You know, they were. Here we have the illusion of being there and the illusion of struggling for your child. What it really is a bunch of damn adults that can't act like adults, that can't take care of themselves and use their kids as an excuse for it. It's just a twisted, inverted, sick version of the toolbox fallacy. Well, I would, but I got to make sure. How about you make sure that you're the best person you can be? Because until you're the best person you can be, you can't be the best parent that you can be. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? And Joe says there is no husband in that picture. Well, yes, this is lionizing single moms, right? It's also lionizing moms, even if they are still married and the husband is still actively involved, and acting as if, you know, when they do have a husband who is a good dad, acting like he doesn't count, especially if he's a cisgendered white guy. Have you noticed that every cisgendered white guy in a sitcom for the last 15 years is a fucking idiot? Have you noticed that? And the woman's always a genius. Right? Have you noticed, like, every situation comedy on television, right? The white dad is a fucking moron. He can't do anything, right? He's a complete simpleton. He's an idiot. He's Homer Simpson, right? Or he's Al Bundy. Those are way predating what I'm talking about. They were Homer Simpson and Al Bundy were the exception in their highlight, you know, in their big time period where they were new. Now that's everybody's a Peter Griffin, a Homer Simpson, or an Al Bundy, right? They're just idiots, because this is how you create a society that collapses under its own weight and becomes dependent on you. What is dependent? Think of a demographic that you can think of and you say, these people are dependent outside of politics. So not liberals. I know you want to say that. Children. We literally call them on our tax form what? Dependents. So if you want people to be dependent, put them in a childlike state. Make them functional where they can take the Campbell's soup can down, open it with a can opener, put it in a bowl and microwave it, but they can't go to the store and get it for themselves. Metaphorically speaking. That's what that is. That's what this is. This is exactly what you're looking at here when you see this. This idea that the very purpose of a parent is to unconditionally sacrifice themselves for their child is nonsense. And the reason it's nonsense is because while it sounds virtuous, logistically it's not doable. You cannot have a person that is like this actually being good to a child. Because they're not because they're not willing, because they're not capable. You have to have self-care in your life. And anybody that doubts me right now, anybody that wants to twist this back the other way, let me explain it to you. Have you ever had to take care of somebody or care about somebody that was self-destructive in your life? A drug addict, an alcoholic, somebody with a real problem with criminal activity, somebody who's headed for rock bottom but not quite there yet, and you have to take care of them, okay? Somebody with a mental disorder, someone that won't take care of themselves, and you love them. You didn't do it professionally, right? You weren't like a caregiver at a home or something. God bless you for doing that, but it's different because that's just your job versus I love this person. If I could take away their burdens and their pain for them, I would do it. And you have to care for that person. It is soul sucking. It is so painful because what you're saying to yourself is, I love you. Why can't you love yourself? This is in my book, by the way, Laws of Life, toward the end of it, this concept. Why can't you love yourself? It is very, very hard to love a being who cannot love itself. They teach you that narcissism is loving yourself. Narcissists fucking hate themselves, and they glorify themselves to compensate for their self-loathing and hatred. They do not love themselves. We have that all twisted in backwards as well. Trying to care for someone who is a self-destructive narcissist is unbelievably hard and painful. Okay, now do it when you're a six-year-old little girl and it's your mom. You get it yet? You owe it to the people you love to fucking take care of yourself, to do the right things for yourself. And that is not to the exclusion of caring for your children, but it might mean sometime you tell fucking Tammy or Timmy, fuck no, you don't get to do that. No, you don't get to be in three leagues. You can pick one. No, you don't get to be in three activities. Pick one. No, you can't have everything you want. Pick two. No, you can't have anything this month. We don't have the money for it this month. I don't want to tell him that. Bitch, if he's Gen X, you heard that when you grew up. We don't have money for that this month. Right? There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having a budget and sticking to it because you have to have a well-balanced life. Most people that say they don't have enough money, what they really don't have is enough discipline. See, discipline is something you have to apply first to yourself, not to your child. These kids need more discipline. The fucking parents need more fucking discipline. That's who needs more discipline. Mom and dad need more fucking personal self-discipline so that they're modeling proper behavior and they're spending time with that kid. And that kid looks at his dad or his mom or her dad and says, I want to grow up and be like them. Do you think if this image is you, that your kid's thinking, oh boy, I can't wait to grow up and be like mommy? We need to be modeling proper behavior, and until we do, we're going to continue to glorify improper behavior. And then it becomes rancid, like a cancer that metastasizes through the body. Tell me it isn't the same mentality that has these nose-pierced, blue-haired retards in our street calling everyone and everything they don't like fascist and Hitler. It's the same dynamic. It just plays out differently. It is a cancer, and it is destroying our society. It is destroying our culture, and here's the important thing to understand. It's exactly what it's supposed to do. The people that seek control in the world know that the more infantile they can make the population, the greater the control they will have over. They want to have a permit for everything. They want to control all walks of life. They want any action other than taking a shit to require a license or a permit. How do you get a society to capitulate to that? How do you do it? You either have to shoot them or you have to make them into adult children, adult adolescents. And tell me the term. When you look at society as a whole today, you look at people between the age of 20 and 35. Tell me you don't look at that and you don't think that adult adolescent doesn't perfectly describe what you're looking at. Now, there's exceptional people and there always will be. There's exceptional 15-year-olds that conduct themselves like you would expect a 25-year-old person to do. But there's 35-year-olds that can't conduct themselves like a responsible 15-year-old. If you're 30-something years old, and you still, you know, pass away your free time playing video games, guys, wake the fuck up. Now, if you're single and you're going to stay single, it's just what you want to do, I don't really care. But if you're a dad, if you're playing a video game, I hope you're doing it with your kid. Not with your buddies. And you pass your time however you want to. If you want to play Call of Duty or whatever the hell y'all play today, I don't care. I mean, I was a kid. I used to play video games too. Then I grew up. But, you know, if some people like different things, I like things that I think other people might consider to be childish as well. I love to fish, right? And not professionally, just for fun. So, but you know what I don't do? Complain about my life and complain I don't have what I need and say that I'm struggling to hold myself up to sacrifice my kids while I'm taking free time that I could be using to improve our entire life situation and spending money on shit that I don't need and they don't need while claiming to be sacrificing for them. Because what that really is, what this picture really is the epitome of being selfish. Look at me! Look at me! Look at me sacrifice for my child who I am ruining their childhood as I do it. Look at me! Look at me! Look at me! Look at me! If I want to sum up our problems as a whole, I can do it with a phrase. How can I make this about me? How can I make this about me? We have been taught to do that, and that doing that is sacrifice. It's sacrifice. It's sacrifice of your life. It's sacrifice of your potential. It's sacrifice of the people you think you're helping, the people you think you're loving. It's disgraceful, and it needs to stop. And the only way to make it stop is to first call it out and to model proper behavior. No more look at me, look at me, look what I've done for my child. And the child is miserable. Yes, parents give things up for their children, but you shouldn't give up your soul. You shouldn't give up your stability. Your emotional stability. Your child needs you to be emotionally stable more than they need a new thing, whatever it is. That's way more important. I just read a report that said 50% of females under the age of 30 themselves say they have mental illness. Yeah. Mental illness. Thinking that's virtuous, that picture right there, yeah. That is the definition of having a mental illness. Why do I tell you all this? Because most of you ain't that bad, but plenty of you have some of this in your life. You need, if you want to be successful as a parent and a spouse, you need to put effort into yourself and into being a good partner to your spouse. It has to be two ways. It has to be two ways. Or what happens is the minute those kids grow up, the minute all of the running around stops, the minute you finally have those years where you start transitioning in life from being parent to hopefully grandparent, and the kids move out, and the kids get jobs, and the kids go to college, and the kids do all that shit, and mom and dad finally sit down on the couch next to you there and go, they realize two things they don't know. They don't know themselves anymore, and they don't know their partner, and the marriage falls apart. That's what happens more times than not. You want to look at the divorce rate and tell me it's not true? You know where the divorce rate started skyrocketing? 1971. We started printing money and coming up with payment plans, and a kid that played baseball in high school had to pay money to play for his school. You don't think it's related? All right. We went from recreation and kids' activities being something that built up society to it's an extraction model. How? There's a million companies. How do we extract more money from soccer moms? How do we extract more money from baseball dads? And I'm not an anti-product guy, you know that, but it can't be everything. There must be balance. And the balance must start inside yourself, or you cannot deliver it to anybody else. I kind of look at it this way. I had a lecture from a liberal at my nephew's house this weekend about how it's important for the United States to be globally involved to support our actions in places like Israel and Ukraine, right? Okay. We can't run our own cities. We can't run Chicago. We can't run Dallas. We can't run Philadelphia. We can't run Los Angeles. We damn sure can't run Portland or Memphis or Seattle worth a shit. A country that can't run its own cities without them turning into crime-filled cesspools doesn't need to be telling any country anywhere else in the world how to run their country. In any way, shape, or form. We don't. You do not have a high enough perch to stand on when you're in that position. Well, everything that's big can be reduced down to a smaller analogy, and that's what you're doing. When you start saying you're sacrificing for your kid, but you can't even manage your own life, how are you managing theirs, and how are you teaching them to manage theirs? How can you expect that a child that grows up with parents that are mentally unstable to grow up and be mentally stable? I will tell you it takes a lot of effort on the part of the child. I can speak with personal experience with that. I grew up with, honest to God, on both sides, terrible parents. Just terrible parents. I grew up with this bullshit. My mother would love to say she's this person right here. She wasn't even this person. She's worse than that. And I can tell you it takes a heroic effort, and I'm one out of three. My two sisters didn't really make it. And there's nothing I can do for them in their lives right now to change that. I would love it if I could, but I know what I'm capable of and know what I'm not. If you still have kids, you need to think about yourself first, but they are a very close second. That's the best way I can put it to you. You must put your mask on first, but then of course you put their mask on so that they don't die. All that, hopefully the plane, and then hopefully the pilot does his job right. That is why it's a perfect analogy. Because there's things that can happen in life that you can't prevent. Your kid can get cancer, terminal. So can you. But just think about that person dealing with that and how piddly your bullshit sounds when it's not you and how hard you're struggling. Find out why you're struggling. I need to make more money. Then do that. But I'll tell you the first thing, like, making more money is easier said than done. But you know what's easier done than said if you actually want to do it? Spending less for most people. And your kids, I'm going to tell you again, one more time. I speak from personal experience. Your son, who's 7 years old, would rather have a Saturday fishing with his dad than he would another pair of shoes. And even if he doesn't know it, as soon as you take him, he will. That's what I got for you guys today. I'm going to wrap up. I will tell you real quick, if you want to help support the show, you can join the Member Support Brigade. And if you do that, you get a bunch of benefits that will pay for your membership back many times over. You can learn about that. Go to survivalpodcast.com and click on members. Do your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Start your shopping there. No matter what you buy, you will support us. And, two primary merchant vendors there, Vavor for like tools and stuff like that, and Amazon for everything else in the universe. And you can, of course, pick up a copy of my book. If my final segment today hits you in the feels in a good way or a bad way, then I'm going to tell you, you need to read Laws of Life if you haven't yet. Especially the second to the last chapter, because it really hits on a lot of what we were talking about today from a different angle. With that, I really appreciate everyone there. I do think I have a few starred things. I will say that if you're still listening and you want to ask a question, I will go through the three that I have, and I will check back over here. If you put the word question in all caps while I'm answering these three and put your question in, I will cover yours too before I go, because, I mean, it's the best I can do. Okay, Idaho Puma, any thoughts on things heating up with OK going to arrest CDL NY drivers? I don't know what you're talking about. I guess you're saying Oklahoma is going to arrest CDL New York. So somebody with a commercial driver's license out of New York State will be arrested if they drive in Oklahoma. I'm not sure how that's going to work. And I need to know more before I can comment on it. And I would definitely assume this has to do with New York and California having some really lax things that they're issuing CDLs on to illegal immigrants who can't read English. There was that Indian truck driver who killed people in Florida. I think he initially got a CDL in Washington, transferred it to California, and both of those states should be culpable because he couldn't read. But I can't comment on that, Idaho Puma, because I don't know the particulars about it, and I don't run my mouth about things I don't know. Guards of Life sent me 10 euros. That's a European symbol there. Said, always receive tremendous information value from your content, profitable, entertaining, and certainly life-charging. Started listening 10 years ago, went from IT job to running a successful, sustainable company. Thank you. Well, hey, man, thank you for the super chat. I really do appreciate that. Remember, when you super chat me, I got to answer you because it automatically stars. I can't miss something that happens automatically. So let's go ahead and take the next one, and that is from Rodney. Rodney says, what's the name of your buddy who used swales to change an ecosystem in Africa? I think you're talking about John D. Liu, but he's not my buddy. Maybe you are talking about Neil, and it's Neil something. I can't think of his last name now. And if I wouldn't have thought of it the way I did, I would have had it. Neil is awesome. And I think that's who you're talking about, but it's Saudi Arabia. I think it's Al-Bashir or something like that, project. If somebody knows who I'm talking about, he was one of Jeff Lawson's Slotin students. I've had him on the air. I love the guy, Neil something. If you could tell me what I'm missing there, I would love to give him proper billing. But I think that's who you're talking about. It was in Saudi Arabia, and it was an incredible project. And he's doing some really cool things now with marine and shallow marine systems down in Mexico and other things. God, Neil, what is his name? I don't know. I'm sorry, Neil. Different Neil than Neil Franklin. And it's right there. And I just need to just give up. And I know the second I say goodbye and I'll catch you tomorrow with our guest, it'll come to me. But I will tell you that tomorrow we have a really cool guest. She's known as Letty Lou. And I was going to look it up, and as soon as I went to look it up, it came to me, Neil Spackman. Anyway, Letty Lou is part of Nicole Sauce's larger network, and she does a lot with admin assistants and AI. She was in my AI first course. She's actually acting as what we're calling a big sister. We have a big sister, big brother program where people from class one can be in the class two chat to help support things. She's a really awesome gal. She's going to be on tomorrow to talk about a variety of things with technology and getting your business from a stage of chaos to organization. So if you're a business person, you really shouldn't miss tomorrow's. But Neil Spackman, I think, is the gentleman that he was asking about. Nick says, what are you thinking of things Candace Owens is saying about the killing of Charlie Kirk? I don't pay attention to Candace Owens at all. I don't care what the fuck Candace Owens says. I think she's lost the plot. I really do. And you can tell me that, well, she said this and she's right about that. Yeah, blind squirrel nut. And sometimes a blind squirrel finds a nut three times a day, but the rest of the time they're running around like an idiot. Candace Owens, some of y'all that like her really won't like what I'm about to say, but Candace Owens is in a whole group of people that are influencers in the conservative space that came from, you know, the Fox News worlds and stuff like that. That there was a leak a while ago. There was a talent site for actors and actresses that was like borderline on-ramp into the porn industry. And one of the many people we found out that was pulled out of that space as an actress and made into a political influencer was Candace Owens. And Candace Owens is a perfect example of when you take someone that has presentation ability, right, nice to look at, good at what she does, able to memorize things, says it, and you make her into a personality. She doesn't earn it, you make it. And I ain't talking about DEI or nothing. I'm just saying that, like, oh, look, there's an actress. She fits the part. We can make her influential. Let's do that. They become convinced that they're really smart. They generally end up being a little bit nutty, and then eventually they go off their meds, and then everything's a conspiracy, and the problem is now they have a platform and people listen to them even after they've been deplatformed from the entity that made them famous. That's my opinion of Candace Owens. If you have a specific thing she said you want me to comment on, maybe. Idaho Puma, when's Bitcoin to the moon? Bitcoin is pain. It's pain. It is the best option you have, and it is going to be all pain all the way. Those of us who have been here a long time, we never promise you money fast. We just say it's the best place to grow your money. If you've held Bitcoin since 2013 like I have, it already went to the moon, right? Well, that's easy for you to say. Well, in 12 years, you'll be able to say it too. I can tell you that. Will you feel that way before 12 years? Probably. Jesse, are you going to Self-Reliance Festival? I cannot this year. Too close to my own event, but no, I will not be there. With that, I am going to say goodbye, and I'll see you tomorrow with Letty Lou. Idaho Puma says, October, baby. I think that's still coming. I think we have one more big run this year, one more big upside, and I wouldn't be shocked to see 150 to 200,000 out of it. I really wouldn't. But don't bet on it. Don't ever bet on it. Just do what I do. Follow my example. I buy Bitcoin every day. It can be a dollar. It can be $5. It can be $10. I went several months. I was buying $25 a day, like clockwork. Buy it every day. Stack it. Move it to cold storage. Once you have a certain amount on exchange, move it over and just keep doing it. Use Strike. Use River. Use something easy. There's plenty of places. You can buy a dollar an hour. Build wealth slowly. But slowly is actually really fast. You know the martial arts thing? Slow is smooth. Slow is smooth and smooth is fast. It works that way. All of a sudden, one day, it just takes off. I'll give you one more thought. My wife and I were talking about this. Well, people in our lives that are important to us that we know are saving no money for their future. They live a pretty good life, but they don't invest in their future. They don't have a 401k, an IRA, a bank account that's growing, a Bitcoin stack, a silver stack. They don't have anything. And they're in their 30s, you know. That person is doing nothing but harming themselves because they can't see a future that's any different than the one that they have as a present, what their present is. And if they would just start saving something that is not going to be, if you're 30 years old and you start saving $20 a week, it's not going to be enough to get where you need to go if that's all you ever do. But the person that starts doing it 4 or 5 months in starts to see that, oh, wait a minute, there actually is something, and they get excited. You know, and as they start investing it and those investments start to climb in value, they get more excited and they start saying, I want more from this. And then they grab onto it. So if nothing else, if that's you, get started. And when it comes to Bitcoin, I know it's real easy for someone that's like, you know, or been around a long time in it to say it'll work out, but it will. But if you think it was easy because we got in early, you are wrong. We had to go through many crashes. We had to go through the block wars in 2017, 2018. We had to go through the fall of exchanges imploding. We had to go through, and that happened multiple different times in multiple different ways. There's all kinds of awful shit that happened, but what we did is we stacked, we held, and we just kept growing, and that's what got us where we wanted to be. And you know, most of us are still doing it. That says something. I've been stacking Bitcoin since 2013, and I woke up this morning, looked at my phone, and yep, my buy went through at 3 o'clock in the morning because that's just for fun when I decided to set it to on Strike. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow. Just run you around. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way.